Look up. It's a bird.
It's a plane. It's...
No. Actually, it's just birds we're talking about today.
Oh, right. That's because today's Allegheny Front is a special show on birds.
Indeed. I'm Jennifer Shveta-Jordan with our energy reporter, Reed Frazier. Today, we're celebrating birds with a visit to Presque Isle Audubon's Springtime Festival of the Birds in Erie.
We're also officially hatching our... Oh, see that bird pun? You're going to hear a lot of those this show. We're officially hatching our bird file segment on the Allegheny Front, and we'll learn more about the work of a famous bird illustrator.
Reed, have you ever been here?
No, and it's really nice here. It's right on Lake Erie. Obviously, it's a peninsula of marshes and small forests and inlets, and there are a ton of birds here.
My name is Diane Belargin. I work at the University of Rochester Strong Memorial Hospital.
What got you into birding?
My partner.
It's her fault.
Yeah, it's her fault. Yeah, it's just a good outlet. And you don't really have to go anywhere. You can sit in your own backyard and enjoy what comes to you. You know, a lot of people, I think more when we bird, we wait sometimes for the birds to come to us. Like we'll pick a spot and just sit instead of chasing them. And a lot of times when you do that, you'll see more than if you're walking around trying to find them.
It's like a metaphor for life, isn't it?
Yes, it is, exactly. That's perfect.
This is the Allegheny Front. You may be wondering, why a bird show? Well, it is spring migration, and Presque Isle is one of the best spots in the country to see migrating birds. Right now, they're fueling up for long flights over the Great Lakes. But that's just the short answer. Truth is, we humans have been fascinated by birds for 35,000 years. The earliest cave paintings in France show an image of an owl someone sketched with their finger into soft mud. Birds appear in royal family crests. In the 1880s, fashionable women wore elaborate hats adorned with bird feathers or entire bodies. These days, we still like to show off our connections with birds, naming housing developments or businesses after them. And of course, there's still the stuff of art. How could they not be with all those colors? Think of the red cardinal in winter. Perhaps a big reason we're so intrigued by birds is because they do one of the things that we cannot easily: fly. But despite our appreciation, we humans have been responsible for the decline of birds. Since the 1500s, about 500 bird species have disappeared, and their population is down by 25%. We've cut down forests, we've introduced invasive species, let feral cat populations grow, and changed the climate. Even putting crystal clear windows on our homes causes many birds to perish when they fly into them. And our wind farms can end up slaughtering thousands of birds, even as they stave off the climate change that hurts birds. By the year 2100, some scientists predict up to 14% of all bird species may become extinct. Does it matter? Well, consider birds are workhorses. They eat pests from crops like coffee, and they're like little environmental officials on the beat every day, testing air, water, and land for safety. Canary in a coal mine is more than just a phrase. And then there is their music. In Silent Spring, Rachel Carson starkly reminded us how much we'd miss these songs if they were gone. 18 million people travel exclusively to commune with other birds and count birds every year. And so it is that we hear from some of those bird fans today on the Allegheny Front. Back to my co-host for the program, Reed Frazier in Presque Isle with some fans of birds.
We're doing a whole show dedicated to birds. Can I get a round of applause for birds?
I'm Bonnie Janader, and I've been watching birds since about 1973. It got started in May because my daughter had the chicken pox. No one wanted to see us coming, and I thought, well, it's the wide open spaces out at Presque Isle. I'll see what's happening out there besides swimming. There were just birds dropping out of the sky. There were so many birds around, I couldn't believe it. So at the end of the first year, I had seen 159 species of birds. I missed a few that were sort of interesting, and one of them was the woodcock. And so I went to my bird mentor, Jean Stahl, and I said, "Jean, how come I'm missing a bird listed as common?" And she said, "Well, you've been carrying binoculars around looking for birds, but this bird you have to listen for, and you have to listen for it at dusk." So I took her advice. Lo and behold, I heard the beep, and that was my first introduction to my favorite bird. It takes off and it flies up into the sky. All of a sudden, it's in broad circles, and it starts diving for the ground, and then it sort of flips around, and it hits the ground, and it goes, beep. I like that.
One of the reasons we wanted to come to Erie is to officially launch our Bird Files segment. You gave the name to this two-minute profile chronicling the life and times of our region's birds.
Aw, shucks, I suppose I did come up with the name, but what's made the segments really take flight is the number of bird experts from around the region who are going to be recording profiles of these birds.
So far, Mary Birdsong from here in Erie has taught us about how wood ducks leap from their steep nests in trees the day after they're born. If you missed that, check out AlleghenyFront.org/birdfiles.
Today, we learn a thing or two about the Louisiana water thrush from Bob Mulvihill at the National Aviary.
The Louisiana water thrush nests in places where rocky streams riffle and run through dappled forests. In the olden days, the Louisiana water thrush was called waterwood wagtail. It does indeed wag or bob its tail. But this sleek brown and white sparrow-sized bird is neither particularly common in Louisiana nor technically a thrush. It is a wood warbler with a long pointed beak and long bubblegum pink legs. The Appalachians, laced with forested streams, are home to a great many of them for part of the year. An estimated 35,000 pairs nest in Pennsylvania alone. Louisiana water thrushes spend more than half of the year feeding along forested tropical streams in Mexico, Central America, and the West Indies. They are among the very first neotropical migrants to return to our region to nest each year by the first week of April. And when they arrive, they begin feeding voraciously on a diet of stream insects such as mayflies and stoneflies, known as irresistible bait for many kinds of fish. Some people have even called the Louisiana water thrush a feathered trout. By the middle of May, when some migrant songbirds are only just returning to the breeding grounds, water thrushes are already busy feeding their nestlings. Water thrushes hide their nest in a cave-like recess in the stream bank, but often a telltale ramp of leaves is at its entrance. Water thrushes can be inconspicuous as they hop along from rock to log in a stream searching for food, all the while wagging their tails, but the male water thrush's territorial song, "Sweet, sweet, sweet, say tuibio tui," is one of the loudest of any warbler. It can easily be heard above the sounds of the rushing water a half a football field away. Its other call is a loud metallic chip. The Louisiana water thrush requires clean streams containing lots of natural food, so the species is a reliable indicator of stream water quality. Wherever clean water rushes, there are water thrushes. The next time you're out in one of our county or state parks, maybe picnicking along a wooded stream, be sure to look and listen for the waterwood wagtail.
That was Bob Mulvihill, ornithologist with the National Aviary in Pittsburgh for the Allegheny Front's Bird Files. Bird calls for this segment were provided by the Macaulay Library at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology.
Our Bird Files segment also is live on Twitter with its own handle and hashtag AFBirds.
I'm Teresa Corrigan from Buffalo, New York.
And Peter Corrigan. Been married 33 years this July, and we just got into this. I'll give my wife a lot of credit for the nature study that we do. We're amateur naturalists. We love birding. I work in a bank in technology. I work in IT security, actually. So this is about as far from that as you can get. And I love it for that reason, too. But T, you've been in education how long?
I've been in education now for 20 years. But I remember going birding, actually birding, the first time in 1996. My feet were getting wet, and I was used to hiking, and we weren't going anywhere, and we were standing around. And then the leader showed me a rufous-eyed towhee, and then right after that a yellow warbler, and I was totally hooked.
Birds are really brave, and they wouldn't think so. They do everything they do by instinct. But when you consider the distances they travel in migration, and the hazards they endure to raise just a single brood of their chicks, it's amazing to me that they even survive. In our neighborhood 2 years ago, I get emotional thinking about this. It was June, and right on the sidewalk, a sharp-shinned hawk grabbed a robin, slammed it down to the sidewalk, killed it right there. And the mate of the robin was in a tree above it, just giving that hawk, what for, what for, what for, just screaming at it, screaming at it. You could hear the anguish in the bird's screams and a call. So I think it's the courage and their beauty, of course. You know, you're getting these flashes of color, and it's like a flash of hope coming into your life. It's fantastic. So I think that's my reason.
Those are good reasons, honey.
Allegheny Front. I'm Jennifer Shveta Jordan with Reed Frazier and a lot of birds around us. This is the Bird Show, recorded in Erie at Presque Isle Bay. Let's talk about the kind of people we're meeting here. Who have you met, Reed?
Well, this morning I went on a hike with Sean Collins. He got up a little bit earlier than I'm used to on the weekends. There was woods and a lake right next to us, and there were a lot of birds.
What I like doing when I lead trips, if you see a bird, just we always go tree, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 2. Birds inside the tree between 2 and 3 o'clock. So you kind of know where to, unless you don't know how to use a clock and or just digital, then I'm sorry. I can't help you.
So what were you calling for?
American Red Start. It's just the odd noise birders make to make birds kind of look. It's called pishing. 9 times out of 10, it's unsuccessful. The only people looking at you are the strangers walking by. They're like, what the hell is this person doing? There is a veery that just flew by, 2 catbirds. There's a small bird in this tree that just... That was a hummingbird.
Oh.
It just dropped, like, quick.
It was so
like...
Fast.
Sean, do you come here a lot?
Yeah. Too much. Especially in the spring. Like, I took off every Friday and Monday in May from my work, just so I could bird. I made my mother buy me bird feeders when I was 8 or 9. I ID'd all of them. We'd go on little trips. I'd see a bird I didn't know. I thought I struck gold. There's a black-throated blue right out in the open.
Oh, pretty.
It's
pretty.
Jumping.
Getting
it's getting higher. There's marsh wren singing. Hear it?
You, when it sings, you can see it.
I got it.
You can see it move. You can see it vibrate.
What is that? That's a wren?
That's that wren that's singing.
Just in the reeds. He's right at the tippy, very tippy top.
Oh, I see. It's moving now. It's moving to the left.
Yeah.
This is the Allegheny Front's special bird show, and I'm Jennifer Shveta Jordan.
I'm Reed Frazier. Like all subcultures, birding has its own set of celebrities. One of the leading voices in the online birding community is Sharon Steitler, a.k.a.
Bird Chick.
Jennifer, you got a chance to talk with her.
I did. Let's listen. I'm here in the Tom Ridge Environmental Center in Erie with Sharon Steitler. She's won fame in birding circles for hosting the Playful Bird Chick podcast. She's written 2 books on birding. She's a national park ranger in Minnesota. Hi, Sharon.
Hello.
Can we kick off this interview with you doing a bird call?
No, I don't do those. And I'll say this. I mean, I always feel like when people ask bird watchers to do that, it's like, ah, ha, ha, look at the freaky bird watcher making funny noises.
What drew you to birds? How did this all begin for you?
You know, I think it's just the way I'm wired. When I was 7 years old, I saw a Peterson field guide, and I saw the pileated woodpecker, or pileated as some people call it, and I snapped. I thought, wow, there's a crow-sized woodpecker. That's so cool. And then everybody started giving me bird gifts, and I had no idea that I would ever turn it into a career, but it just worked out that way, and my love of birds has never faltered.
I don't know when this shifted, but it seems to me that bird watching has become birding.
It was a gradual thing. I think because people who look at birds, they don't just watch them. You're oftentimes studying them. You're learning about their behavior. Maybe you're doing some volunteer work to contribute to the habitat. So it's not just looking at the bird. You're also listening. So that's where the shift happened.
Even I noticed in one of your recent podcasts, you discussed how there are blind birders, in fact. Mm-hmm. And so they're not necessarily watching, but they're still going out there and checking out birds.
Yeah, and bird calls are one of my favorite things. One of the neat things for Presque Isle for me has been listening to all the wood thrushes. That's not a common bird in Minnesota, but that song has such special memories for me. My mom wasn't a bird watcher, but when we moved into a house when I was 13, we heard this bird like crazy, and she and I spent a Saturday afternoon trying to see what bird was making this beautiful call. And so just the memory of my mom, and the song is haunting and gorgeous. It's a bird that can harmonize with itself, for crying out loud. I would be really sad if I ever lost my ability to hear thrushes.
And did you and your mom see it that day?
We did, and we were really disappointed because it was brown. It was brown, and it had a white belly with black speckles. I mean, now as an adult, I know I can appreciate a brown bird, but as a kid, I was like, you should have been way more colorful with a song like that.
I've listened to your podcast and seen some of your YouTube videos, and you like to get a little racy with the sex jokes interspersed with the information. Even by calling yourself the decidedly non-feminist chick, do you think it's fair to say that you're not your grandmother's birder?
I'm definitely not your grandmother's birder, and I think that's where a lot of the humor in my videos come from. And I am a feminist. I'm just not the right kind of feminist for certain people. But yeah, when I grew up, bird watching, it was a nerdy thing to do. It was Jane Hathaway. It was something that your grandmother did.
Oh, Jane Hathaway from Beverly Hillbillies?
That was the poster child for bird watching.
I didn't even know.
Yeah, she would like go out in the pith helmet. And then if you ever watch the Alfred Hitchcock movie, The Birds, the ornithologist in that is this uptight nut job woman. And so, you know, I wanted people to know that you can be a regular person, you can watch popular movies, you can engage in conversations and, you know, have whiskey and still enjoy birds. It's not just something that the socially inept do. Although quite a few socially inept people do it, but...
And so whiskey, is that what I hear? Like in your bird podcast, I hear ice.
It amazes me how many people catch on to that. Yeah, my husband and I, we generally are having whiskey. We've even made up cocktails. Like we made up an ivory-billed woodpecker. It had like almond slivers in it to represent the ivory bill. So yeah, we drink.
So have you been here before to Presque Isle?
I have not. This is my first time to Presque Isle. And I was really excited when the festival booked me as a speaker here. It's just absolutely gorgeous. And I've birded along Lake Erie in the spring, but not this particular area. And I just love that I'm not jam-packed in on a boardwalk and I can walk around. And it's a nice, quiet festival. Some festivals I go to get thousands of people coming. This one's just nice, low-key, laid-back. And this is a great festival for a beginning bird watcher, too. It's not very intimidating at all.
Tell me a little about you and your work.
I do a little bit with the Park Service, but I do avian point count surveys. So some days I'm paid ridiculous amounts of money to sit and watch a bald eagle nest all day. I have to do flights over the Mississippi River to count ducks. I do photography workshops. I've been barfed on by pelicans. So.
Oh my.
And on Instagram and on Twitter, I'll post today's office. And what I try to do is just post what habitat I'm in, or, you know, just to show that, you know, you can have different offices besides a desk. You can actually be outside. And most of the time it works, although days when my office is -3 degrees Fahrenheit, they're not as much fun.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with bird chick, that's Sharon Steitler. She's the keynote speaker at the Presque Isle Festival of Birds here in Erie, Pennsylvania. This is the Allegheny Front's special bird show. We're recording today in Erie, Pennsylvania, home of the Presque Isle Audubon Bird Festival.
To our east, in Jamestown, New York, is another birding landmark. If you've looked through the birding guides in the bookstore or library, you've probably come across the work of Roger Torrey Peterson. His detailed drawings and paintings set the standard for how people identify birds by sight today.
His passion for birds of all kinds and keen eye are evident at the institute named for him.
The Allegheny Front's Kara Holsapple got a tour of his original sketches and some of his personal birdwatching belongings there.
Outside of the Roger Torrey Peterson Institute in Jamestown, New York, it's noisy. Songbirds are calling from the nature trails and bird feeders. But inside the arts and crafts style mansion, it's much quieter because most of the birds here are on paper.
Let me show you around a little
bit. Thank you.
Okay, I'll start you right off, introducing you to the main guy.
Tina Sherman has been showing visitors around here for 20 years, and she's giving me a private tour of the exhibits and archives today. In the central, well-lit room beyond the main doors is a bronze bust of a grandfatherly man.
There he is. This is Roger Torrey Peterson. Okay.
Before Peterson, bird guides were for experts. They were massive, with scientific names. Peterson shrunk them down and made them accessible. Peterson was born just 9 or 10 blocks from here in 1908. Sherman says he was just a normal kid, but got inspired by a grade school teacher to explore nature. And then something happened. She points to a sculpture of a bird in the woodpecker family. It has a long beak it uses to peck for ants.
This is called like his epiphany bird, at least that's what I call it anyway, but this is a northern flicker. He was out wandering in the woods one day. He saw what he thought was a dead little brown bird, and he went up and did what any boy would do. He tried to poke at it, and the bird kind of jumped up and it spread its wings, and even though you can't see it on the sculpture, the underside of the wings on this bird are bright yellow. So when this bird went like this, spread out its wings, it just dazzled Roger.
And so his fate was sealed at 11 years old. This fascination with birds and a natural talent for sketching led Peterson to pursue an idea that's displayed in a glass case here.
What you're looking at there is the field guide to birds. And this is really what Roger contributed to society.
The birds are depicted on the page by what look like their mugshots, straightforward, looking out at the viewer. In 1934, as a young man looking for a way to distinguish himself, he adapted the idea from a childhood storybook. His method of easily matching birds with pictures brought bird watching to the masses.
So that when you see these birds, you know, like I say, flitting by you quickly in the field, you can go, did I see that chestnut stripe on that bird? That must be a chestnut-sided warbler.
Upstairs are the Peterson Archives. The rooms combine science, education, and art.
I just pulled this out because it's kind of fun.
Sherman lifts an old, painted brown metal object up to her shoulder.
This is a gun stock that he mounted a camera on it. So I used it with the kids the other day saying, you know, John James Audubon used to shoot the birds with a gun. But Roger Torrey Peterson, and I pull this out and I say, he used to shoot the birds. And they go, oh, he did? And I says, with a camera. And it has a place to put a camera in there.
I asked Sherman to show me her favorite piece in the museum. She leads me to a page of black and white herons in a simple frame. It's the very first study Peterson drew for the original field guide. Nearby is another field guide style painting.
It's unfinished because this is the absolute last painting illustration that Roger ever did. He got that far, went upstairs to go to bed, come back, was going to come back and finish it in the morning, and that was the night he died. That's, to me, that just is amazing that on the day he died, he was still working on field guide illustrations or doing his artwork. You know, he didn't just slip away into retirement and say, I've done enough. He was working on the day he died.
It's inspiration.
It is.
Roger Torrey Peterson died in 1996, but he left dozens of Peterson brand field guides based on his system. And not just for birds. Field guides for butterflies, beetles, and edible plants have given millions the chance to see what Peterson saw. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Kara Holsapple.
I'm Reed Frazier. Well, we've returned back from Erie to Pittsburgh to wrap up today's bird show to kind of make the point that birds aren't just for festivals at the shore, But they're everywhere, even in the city, even on my front porch where we're sitting now.
And Reed, even the most common yard birds can be a real solace. The day this festival ended, there was actually a murder of a young man in Pittsburgh. I talked to artist Vanessa German, who's still really shaken from that. It happened just outside a house where she welcomes children to create art. She shared a prayer she wrote after that experience. It includes mention of a bird, and I recorded that and a short conversation with her. Here it is.
I am praying for you in the soft room of my heart, where the beat gets its rhythm, where the pulse gets its marching orders. I am seeing and beseeching on your behalf. I have laid out the rug and cleaned the table. I go to the wall for you. My palms are up. My song is up. My soul is two gold hands, and they are up and up and up for you. We have woven a new cloth, my love. No matter of ill or sour shall make its way into your grin, marrow, or dancing shoes. The naysayers have nothing to say. The mean-spirited are busy watching the afternoon clouds gather, anticipating their own storm. But you, my love, you are four in, about, steeped toe to cheek in the sweet, sweet prayer song, so soulful. It is the very sound of your own voice, resurrecting a sea of thank yous from the garbage pail. I am so grateful that you are here and alive. And though the day weighs molasses-like in your marrow, even the laughing children on the block are singing your praises, starling, darling. No thing will keep you from the miracle of your own ferociousness, from the miracle and might of your lion-like intentions. Love rages and rages on and on.
So did you see a starling?
Did I see a starling? I don't know what a starling looks like. I see lots of little birds that I think are starlings or sparrows, and I see them around in front of the house.
And I asked you to read that because I'd seen your Facebook post Mother's Day, and was this at all in response to that?
It was a response. So someone was killed in front of the house early Mother's Day morning, and what people don't know is that I knew that person. I wrote the prayer because I know that so many people have hard times, and they might think that nobody is looking out for them, or that they've been forgotten, or that people are only looking at them for their mistakes. But I see these little birds flying around, and I think about how they say that if God watches the little birds, that he watches you too.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That was Vanessa German and her prayer after the murder of a man in Pittsburgh.
Thanks for listening to the Allegheny Front's special bird show, recorded in Erie's Presque Isle.
Kara Holsoppel is the production and digital editor.
Kathy Naur is the executive producer. I'm Jennifer Shveta-Jordan.
And I'm Reed Frazier.
Don't forget to follow Bird Files on Twitter at AFBirds. And join us again next time for more environmental news around your home on the Allegheny Front.
Tweet.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from the Heinz Endowments. Our coverage of the Marcellus Shale is supported by the Roy A. Hunt Foundation, the Park Foundation, and the George and Miriam Martin Foundation. The Richard King Mellon Foundation supports coverage of energy and conservation. The Pittsburgh Foundation supports Climate Chronicles, our series on climate change.